In this episode, Colin Trevorrow teases a terrifying clip from the Jurassic World Dominion score by Michael Giacchino, why video game composers continue to not receive their proper streaming royalties, and Danny Elfman says the dub in the 1989 Batman film ruined his score. Welcome to the Soundtrack News for Saturday, May 15th, 2021. I'm Christopher Coleman.
And I'm Dane Walker. The Soundtrack News is a podcast that features recent news from the world of film, television, and video game music, as well as the latest details about new and upcoming soundtrack releases.
Welcome back, everyone, to this Soundtrack podcast. We've been off for a couple weeks, and so we wanted to just take a few minutes to tell you why. We've been retooling the show a little bit and looking to make it a little more casual, a little bit more discussion-y, if such a word exists, but it doesn't. we still want to bring you news stories, and that we're going to do at least three or about three news stories every time, and also new releases. And we're going to have some brief discussion of each, which we didn't do in the first nine episodes of the Soundtrack News. We hope you're up for a change, and we'd love to get your feedback on it. And we're going to do our best to make it informative, but also interesting and something you'll engage with. Dane, you have any thoughts about it?
I'm excited about it. I think discussing the news together is fun and provides people our opinions rather than our quoting.
Well, let's get into our top stories. On May 3rd, Colin Trevorrow, on his Instagram account, put a bit of Michael Giacchino's score to the Dark Souls 3 video game footage, and Collider.com picked up on it and did a post on their website and shared the Instagram post as well, and then speculated a little bit about what they thought the music meant in terms of the tone of the film, that it might be more of a horror-oriented film than action-adventure sci-fi. The post did quite well on Instagram for Colin Trevorrow, 29,421 views as of this recording. And so we got a piece of Michael Giacchino's score, which I'll drop a clip of right here.
On May 11th, EDM.com released an article discussing how video game music composers are plagued by irresponsible crediting and metadata practices. Their tagline was, "Though video game music is in high demand, composers still aren't getting their due." It states that even though there are high streaming counts of video game music, some video game music composers say that those streaming numbers mean nothing in the grand scheme of things. Unfortunately for most, modern changes in the way that music is distributed and licensed have had negative implications for composers seeking their rightful shares because it seems that correct management of music and its distribution is more important than ever. But due to the rise of digital service providers and social media platforms like TikTok and Twitch, the process has become extremely convoluted. And one of the major problems lies in metadata, the key information embedded into audio files such as track names, composer credits, and even tempo and genre. Unfortunately, in the case of many composers in the modern era, the process of entering that metadata feels more like an afterthought, and thus many composers are not even credited, and often the composers go unrewarded. One acclaimed composer of video game, television, and movie music told Video Games Chronicle that, quote, "good metadata only exists in about 10% of the industry," unquote. That's a baffling statistic considering the impact of a musical score or soundtrack on a blockbuster film or indie video game. Yeah. Quote, "there are so many game companies that just don't do it properly because they don't know how to do it," the composer told the Video Game Chronicles. Quote, "they're not in the habit of getting proper cue sheets from composers. This happens in TV, radio, and film, but not in games." Unfortunately for those artists, the only people that request these are the top-tier game publishers because they're the only ones involved in the real publishing of the music. So basically, when proper crediting is not attributed to the work, many composers and artists get left in the dust when it comes to their royalty Splits.
And finally, composer Danny Elfman was on the Premier Guitar Podcast on April 28th of 2021 and dove into his thoughts and feelings about how his original score for the 1989 Batman film were dubbed into the film. And he was not too happy about it. Here's a clip from that podcast.
So what you're saying by a mix I wasn't happy with is really the dub. And I was terribly unhappy with the dub on Batman. At that point in 1987, 8, 9, early 80s, they're still kind of going in the old school way of like, you know, you do the score, you turn it in, the guys turn it down at the professionals, turn the knobs and dub it in. And dubbing had gotten real wonky in those years. And we recorded three channels, right, center, left. Mm-hmm. That's film stereo. And basically, they took the center channel out of the music completely and just sent it right and left. So they turned the three channels that we'd given them into two just to leave more room for the sound effects and make it easier. So it was just dealt with like, you know, and then we got the sound effects and we have the music.
And those are our news stories for the episode. And now on to our discussion. Colin Trevorrow puts out that music for Jurassic Park Dominion. What were your thoughts on it?
I kind of thought it was funny Instagram post because this video game that had nothing to do with Jurassic Park with this horrific anvil slamming music in the background. It was kind of funny. I had to close my eyes and picture that with dinosaurs and not with the weird, it looked like Assassin's Creed video game going on at the same time. But
yeah, it doesn't really sound like, I mean, it's such a small sample, but it doesn't really sound like any of the previous Jurassic World scores, which is fine. It seemed to lead Collider to believe that it's going to be more of a horror-oriented film, which maybe it is, but it seems like a bit of a stretch to say that from one short clip of music. Does it make you any more excited or less excited or the same for the film or the score?
It didn't change my excitement level. I expect great things, so I don't know. It didn't faze me at all. Okay, great might be an over-exaggeration, but I expect a good score from Michael Giacchino for this film.
I guess it was refreshing to hear something different, that it wasn't just the Jurassic Park theme, you know, a variant of it. It was a kind of a new palette of sound and texture. I think that's interesting. I don't think it makes me any more or less excited for the film. I don't know if I'll go and see it in a theater, even though it doesn't come out till June of 2022. I'm not super interested. Now, if the trailer comes out and it looks phenomenal, you know, maybe so. But at this moment, I'm a little bit blasé on the whole thing. But no matter what, I'll listen to the score for sure as soon as humanly possible. Any other thoughts about it?
No, I just thought it was kind of a funny thing for him to put out there. It was I think it was just kind of ridiculous, frankly.
Well, on one hand, it's a good move because no one's thought about that movie in a while, you know, and at least it has gotten people to talk about it and like, oh yeah, that movie's coming. You know, there's been so many things that have been delayed because of COVID and all of that. Maybe a shrewd move marketing wise just to, oh, yeah, Jurassic World, it's coming. You know, I mean, it's kind of sad. Oh, it's not coming for another year, but at least it reminds you that it's out there. If you're interested, maybe you'll find more stuff like this from Colin Trevorrow, and you can follow him on Instagram at colin.trevorrow. All right, let's move on to the EDM article.
Yeah, this article is fascinating to me because cue sheets, which are the sheets that composers submit or publication houses submit to the I forget what they're called at the moment. I'm flaking, but ASCAP, BMI, CSAC, the groups that monitor and make sure royalties are doled out appropriately. Q-sheets are responsible for those organizations knowing who deserves what cash when. And composers are always sort of getting, I don't want to use the term screwed over because that just seems mean, but composers are getting sort of left in the background. They're kind of getting left behind when those cue sheets are filled out. And for me personally, and I know other composers that do this, I always tell them, I will submit the cue sheet. You can review it, but I'm going to make it and give it to you, and then I will submit it. And the reason in the article it discussed the top tier video game companies are managing it is because they own part of the publishing, so it's in their best interest to get it right. But these smaller tier ones, you're doing buyouts, you're doing other agreements where your music gets owned by you only. And then therefore they never really care to get the cue sheet right because it's just a side item that they have to take care of in the long run. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised that just because it was of the video game variety that there's even apparently less care taken in submitting the cue sheets and the metadata and all of that, which would certainly help the composers get paid for the work that they've done. I mean, in terms of streaming royalties, I'm a little surprised to see that. The bit from our friend Grant Kirkhope, you know, he talked about some very specific examples where a composer got some help from other composers and asked the publisher to not credit him and credit them, and they didn't. They just credited him. It's just kind of sad that that they don't take the time to credit, you know, these composers who are working so hard on these projects.
There's a part of me that wonders if it gets reduced to admin work, and so it drops to a lower level employee, which I don't want to diss lower level employees. Every employee is great.
Sure.
Especially in a labor shortage. But I think, you know, it drops down and then it's an assistant or maybe even an intern level person who doesn't know the benefits of what they're doing and the importance of getting it right. And they just go, oh, I can copy and paste this composer's name and that solves the problem. Boom, Excel spreadsheet done, print, sent off to, you know, organization. It is fascinating to me because I'm surprised that game composers aren't taking it upon themselves to get the cue sheet right themselves and then ship it off, if that makes sense.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know how that works, if they even have the opportunity to do it or not. I don't know. It does sound like there are some organizations which are trying to help with this, and even a record label that Laced Records, and Danny Kelleher is trying to do that work for these composers. I think that's great, and hopefully it will make a big difference and they'll start getting their streaming royalties properly as a result of the work of these sorts of companies.
Yes. I do hope it improves. And if nothing else, this article maybe draws attention to it, to those companies, to go, hey, we better be getting this right. We're hurting others.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, you would think composers saying, hey, I'm not getting any royalties. Could you please help me or let me help myself? Ah, the sound. So for those of you who don't know what that sound was, we basically have 5 minutes per news story to discuss. So when that 5 minutes is up, we will move on to the next category, although that was not the right sound.
I know. I don't know what happened. We lost our ooga. I don't know what happened to my phone.
Genteel. Let's talk about Danny Elfman and his apparent unhappiness with his Batman score, at least the dub, in the film. Who knew? I've never heard this before. Had you ever heard that he was not happy with how the score was dubbed?
No, I'd never heard this before, and I don't recall ever thinking in any of the times I've ever seen that film, oh my word, I can't hear the music. I always think the music is like right there. I think it's great. Now, later films of his for sure, but not that one.
Yeah, he in that interview, which you can find at Premier Guitar on their podcast, if you want to hear just this specific part, you can go to timestamp of 2322. He talks very specifically about them taking what was originally mixed for a three-channel, left, right, and center, and just knocking it down to two, and basically mixing it for the dialogue. So, hey, we got to make sure the dialogue's heard. The music, let's make sure the music is there, but make sure the dialogue is coming through loud and clear. Yeah. He also talked about cymbal crashes being a bit too loud, and if he had it all over to do it, if he could do it all over again, he would, you know, be recording all of the different sections separately as they do now, especially the cymbals, and then, you know, changing or mixing it accordingly.
I was curious, and you can recall maybe better than I can, was surround sound out back then?
I think some level of surround was out then, yeah.
Okay.
I remember surround going all the way back to like 1978.
What?
Remember going to see, I went to see the Battlestar Galactica pilot in a theater, and the whole marketing was in surround. And so what they showed on TV, that pilot episode, they put in the theaters, and the whole thing was in surround. So there was some level of sound, if it was quadraphonic or what it was.
Yeah, was it like stereo surround?
Something. It was some version of surround.
Interesting.
I mean, if you say Danny Elfman, I mean, how many people have that as the first score that comes to their mind, you know, when you say Danny
Correct.
Elfman?
Correct. It's true.
A lot of people. That's right. Like George Lucas, John Williams being like, you know, I wasn't really happy with the dub on Star Wars.
Wait,
what?
it's fascinating to me, and the story he tells in that interview where he talks about his audio engineer getting one pass and then he was done. It was kind of unfortunate to hear. I did like how he kind of came back and said nobody's doing this for nefarious reasons. Everybody's doing their best. It just ends up in this situation.
And he says now they're not mixing for dialogue as much as they're mixing for sound effects. It's like,
right,
make sure the sound effects are coming through and the music, don't let the music get in the way of the sound effects.
Basically. Right, which is why all of us turn up the sound when the dialogue is there and then turn it back down when the action starts and then turn it back up when the...
Yeah, so it's... it's an interesting interview, and I hope you guys will check it out. The whole interview's, I haven't listened to all of it. I've listened to most of it. But that section, he kind of goes on to talk more about, you know, mixing and dubbing and what he prefers and all of that after he specifically talks about Batman. But check it out at Premier Guitar, the Premier Guitar podcast, and you can hear him. You'll find a link in the show notes to get you there easily and quickly. Let's do our new releases. Nicholas Britell's score for The Underground Railroad, which just released on Amazon Prime, was released by Lakeshore on May 14th, 2021. You can find it digitally just about everywhere. And they released one track entitled Bessie a day or two before the release of the series and the soundtrack. And that particular track was absolutely amazing. Did you listen to that track?
I didn't have time to listen to it. I was fascinated by your take on it. You said it was really good. What did you like about it?
It's just really beautiful. It just was not something I was expecting to hear in a score for the Underground Railroad, but it's a genuinely beautiful piece. It's the progression is very similar to what is that? One of my favorite themes that Graham Revell ever did, the love theme for The Saint.
Oh yeah,
it's got a very similar chord progression in it. Yeah, it's really sumptuous and really beautiful. The majority of the rest of the score is not like that. It's a little more tense, a little more pensive, more what you might expect in something.
For something about the Underground Railroad. Yeah.
Yeah, but it recalls that theme at least one other time towards the end, and it's another beautiful rendition of it. But definitely something I would recommend people check out. It's on Spotify. You can listen to it there. It's also on Amazon. You can get it there. Definitely something to put into your ears. I look forward to watching the series as well.
Excellent. Well, I'm excited. Mondo is releasing a special release of the Cobra Kai soundtrack on LP and cassette. That score is composed by Leo Berenberg and Zach Robinson. That is, you can pre-order it now on the Mondo Records website, and it will come out July of 2021, this year. And again, it's three LPs and a cassette. It looks amazing. It's totally rock and roll. The first
is it
record,
all together?
No. So the first record covers the Cobra Kai Dojo. The second record covers the Miyagi-Do music. And the third record covers the final fight sequence music from the previous three seasons. Now, how they're going to get that on one cassette, I do not know. Oh, also, I was excited by La La Land releasing Michael Kamen's expanded X-Men score. It's a two-disc set. It's currently available on lalalandrecords.com. It's on CD, 3,000 units. So get it. It's going to go fast. The first disc is the full original score. The second disc is additional music from the film and some alternate takes, I believe. Just excited to have another Kamen score out. I didn't realize this was his last score for a 20th Century Fox film.
Is that who he scored most of his scores around with 20th Century Fox or something?
I don't know. I think that he had done a number of films for them, and then all of a sudden it was like, yeah, that I'm not, you know, he wasn't working with them anymore and had moved on. I as I recall, there was a bit of controversy with this score, wasn't there?
I don't remember there being controversy. I remember was it was that short.
Or was that on X2?
Maybe there was controversy since he didn't come back for X2.
Right. But yeah, the original disc, as you just mentioned, was extremely short. So having this in expanded, and it looks gorgeous too. The artwork looks great.
Yeah, I remember, I think there's like only one or two tracks on the original release that I even listened to. So I'm curious and eager to hear what they've added. The original theme, that Michael Kamen's original theme for X-Men, has always stayed with me. And every X-Men score that's come out since, well, not every, but most, I always compare their main theme to his. And there seems to be some connective tissue there, at least with John Ottman and what he did. Which I think I interviewed Michael Kamen once. No, it's probably John Ottman. I interviewed John Ottman. I asked him about, because his score, his main theme for X-Men was different from Kamen's, but clearly seemed to be similar and connected.
Right.
Which, if you listen to the 90s, I guess it was it the 80s or 90s when the X-Men animated show was on? Was that 90s? Anyway, the original theme there seem to set the tone, because they all have a core bit of music that seemed to be consistent, which I loved, that they kept that core consistent through the various X-Men scores. So I'm eager to hear what they've added to this expanded edition. Well, that's going to wrap up this episode of the Soundtrack News. Thank you so much for listening. We would love to get your feedback on this new format. If you're liking it, not liking it, whichever, let us know what you think. You can send us email at thesoundtracknews@gmail.com. For Twitter activity, you can handle that at TrackSounds on Twitter. We're also on Facebook at the Soundtrack News and Instagram as well.
You can find and follow me on Twitter at Maestro Dane. You can also check out my SoundCloud under Dane Walker Music. You can also find me on Spotify, CD Baby, and Bandcamp.
You can find and follow me on Twitter at C Coleman. And you can subscribe to the Soundtrack News anywhere you find quality podcasts. And wherever you do subscribe, take a moment to leave us a review and give us a little rating. It helps other people discover the podcast as well. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to bringing you more news in our next episode.